So we're recording this on the same night as the State of the Union. So my question for you guys tonight, what fictional president would you rather be giving the State of the Union tonight? Matt, you came up with yours pretty quickly. Who would you like?
I did. Because, all right. Well, it would be Bill Pullman. Bill Pullman's president from Independence Day. Because the speech that he gives and how all in he is with that battle against the aliens, like, I would have signed up to fight aliens for that president.
I had to do a lot of searching and looking and whatnot, but I'm going to go with Lisa Simpson. She's pretty dang smart. She's probably the smartest person in Springfield. And if, you know, anybody can bring that kind of intelligence to the White House, it's definitely her. Lydia.
So I am going to go with the president from the National Treasure Book of Secrets, because he just seems like he's be a really chill guy to listen to talk. And he, you know, he handled being kidnapped and everything like really well. So I think he has like a sense of humor, and he can kind of understand how all of us are feeling about things. So I think he'd be fun to listen to.
And Tabitha.
So I don't know what it says about me, but one of my favorite childhood movies is My Fellow Americans with Jack Lemmon and James Garner. And it is because of that movie that every time I hear Hail to the Chief start to play, there's this scene in the movie where they're talking about what they think the lyrics are. And Jack Lemmon's character says, he's like singing it, and he's like, hail to the chief, he's the chief and he needs hailing, hail to the chief, he is the chief, so everybody hail me. And so every time I hear hail to the chief, I sing
that
in my head every single time. Hail to the chief, he's the chief and he needs hailing, like every time.
We learned something new about Tabitha today.
It's a fantastic movie.
I mean, that was, for a stretch, that was one of my grandmother's favorite movies, so, like, I'm very familiar with that one. So.
You're listening to The Geek Awakens with Mitch,
Matt,
Tabitha,
and Lydia.
All right, so we've got a bunch of stuff to talk about tonight. The first thing that I want to talk about is actually something that you brought up, Lydia, because this is kind of really big news. Let's talk about Rooster Teeth closing down.
So after 20 years, actually about 21 years of creating things such as Red versus Blue, Ruby, Genlock, Rooster Teeth is basically shutting down. They are currently owned by Warner Brothers Discovery, but they are looking to sell some of Rooster Teeth's creations coming here soon. Things like the Roost podcast is still going to continue on. It's not affected by this, but as a whole, the Rooster Teeth name is shutting down. I lost my page, guys.
Well, while you're looking for that, at first I was like, well, this is like an additional like thing with the string of these types of things happening. But then you said Warner Brothers Discovery, and I'm like, oh, so this is just like one of the other kind of shady things that Warner Brothers Discovery is doing right now.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So the general manager of Rooster Teeth, Jordan Levin, did share a fairly long memo to the staff, basically, you know, thanking them for their time and all the work that's been put into it over the years. Like, it's a really long and very heartfelt thing. But some of the, like, last statements, kind of like you were saying, kind of leads to the issues that's probably going on, because it says, let's see. Every story reaches its final pages. Rooster Teeth's closure isn't merely an end. It reflects broader business dynamics, monetization shifts, platform algorithms, advertising challenges, and the ebb and flow of patronage. All these converging factors have led to many closures in the industry, and while we learn about updates on programming day by day, we will share our plans for shows, franchises, partnerships, and merch soon and share those updates with teams internally and with the community on RoosterTeeth.com. So, sounds like they're kind of, you know, hinting at the fact of we've been trying to keep up with everything, but it's become too hard and they're not making it any easier on us. So that kind of sucks.
It's always weird and almost uncomfortable when like a studio that's been around for a long time and like was self-sufficient gets bought out by a large corporation. And you'd think at that point they should have additional financial backing to like, oh, here's a slightly rough patch. Let's give you a little bit of extra cash flow so that you can keep the doors open, keep doing what you're doing because you've been at it for so long and everybody loves what you do. And instead anymore, it's like you get bought out by that big company and you're even more alone than when you were on your own as one of those small studios. And it's just, I don't have any other way to say it, but it's bullshit. Like, that's not how that's supposed to work.
Well, in a way, it almost feels like rather than buying these smaller companies to make them be able to grow, they buy them simply so that they can crush them.
Yeah.
Like, as big as Rooster Teeth was and how big of a community it had on its own, it almost feels like they got bought out by these bigger companies just because they're like, oh, you're getting too big. Here, let me just reel you in a little bit.
Yeah. You have these properties that we want, and we'll keep maybe one or two in the long haul, but everybody else is going to go the way of the dodo, and tough luck.
Yeah. Which, I mean, that can also be said with other industries as well. You know, this kind of reminded me, and I might be speaking a little bit out of turn, but if I'm not mistaken, like when Toys R Us got bought out, like, shortly before they shut down, like Toys R Us had their problems, but they were still kind of okay. Mm-hmm. They get bought out, and this what's the word I'm looking for?
Multinational conglomerate?
We'll go with that. but yeah, like the new owners, yeah, they basically hemorrhage it to the point where, you know, they then can close it. They have all these, you know, properties that they can sell and, you know, basically turn a profit.
Yeah.
Again, like, I'm clearly not on CNBC, but but yeah, but it was something similar to that. And so, yeah, that's definitely kind of what I'm feeling, especially with some of the things that Warner Brothers Discovery has been doing with a lot of their movies lately and things like that. So, like, once you said that, I'm like, okay, this makes total sense. So let's go ahead and open up the pull list.
What's on our pull list this week?
And before we talk about reviews, I want to quickly talk about something cool that Vault's doing. They announced today that to celebrate the upcoming Barbaric Born in Blood, Vault Comics and Zoop are teaming up for not a crowdfunding campaign, but a crowd-building campaign. Fans who join the campaign can get digital access to Born in Blood number 1 for free, as well as purchase other merch like previous volumes of the series, exclusive covers of the issue, and an axe enamel pin. The more fans who join the campaign, the more prizes that will be unlocked, including more digital comics, as well as behind-the-scenes art and other stuff. This campaign goes through March 12th. I may or may not have signed up for this campaign to get the free issue, as well as the axe pen. Yeah.
I just want the pen.
Yeah.
I want to add it to my collection.
And the cool thing about this, too, is, you know, like with Zoop, like with other like crowdfunding things, like it's not going to take the money until the campaign ends. Mm-hmm. So, exactly. So, like, you know, for instance, you know, let's say this was an actual crowdfunding campaign. If it didn't reach its goal, you wouldn't be charged. With this, like, there's not really a goal. So, like, you know, like, you are definitely buying whatever you're selecting. But yeah, this is a really cool idea. It's a really fun idea. And plus it's to get, you know, build more interest in this series.
I think that's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I love the fact that it's more along the lines of, instead of hitting stretch goals, it's like, for monetary value, it's like the number of fans that join. Like, the more fans open up more options and more cool shit to buy. Like, that's, I don't know. And I know that in the long run, it's the same thing said in a different way, but it's being done in a way that doesn't feel like as much of a money grab,
mm-hmm.
but like you said, more of a crowd building than a funding.
Yeah. And plus, like, at the end of the day, if you just want to sign up for that free number one, you can just get that and not pay a dime.
Yeah.
But that axe pin is real effing cool. Oh my God. So we've got two books to talk about tonight. They are both out now from Oni Press. The first one is I Feel Awful, Thanks. I'm not for sure if that's how it's supposed to be said, but that's how I read it every time.
I mean, that's how the punctuation is.
Yeah, basically. So this is by Laura Pickle. So Joanna is a young witch who found her dream job creating potions in London. But things aren't as easy as it seems as she deals with stress from her flatmate, her job, and her love life. I am about halfway through this book, and I am loving it so far. I love how, you know, you're seeing these issues, and there have been multiple times where, like, she is more or less, like, not like having a full-on breakdown, but she is more or less having the beginnings of a breakdown, and you see that in the cracks in the panels, and I think that is just a brilliant, brilliant idea. Tabitha, what'd you think?
I am a little more than halfway through this, and I am having a great time. As someone who suffers from panic attacks, this is very, very relatable. How you're like, I'm fine, everything's great. And then, like, literally the next panel in this, but like the next flash second of your life, you're like, I'm not fine, I'm not fine, I'm not fine. Everything is falling apart. And then it's like 2 seconds later, you're like, oh my God, I was being so dramatic. Everything's fine. Like, very relatable. I can't wait to go home and get this finished. Like, this is great. The art is fantastic. It's cute. It's quirky in its own way. I love the witchcraft aspect, and the person's got a cubicle in her witchy woo-woo job. It's the dream. So I love this so far.
Matt, what about you?
Yeah, I very much enjoyed this. I did not really like, most of the time I am the person that reads the intro, the author's note at the beginning, the background, that kind of stuff before I jump into these things. I did not on this one. I just started in. So I did not really expect the anxiety and emotional aspect of this and the character and everything that she was going to deal with, which originally took me off guard. But like, the further you get into it, I really enjoyed it, how it is. She's dealing with all the different aspects of everything that, like, everybody deals with. Like, it was very relatable in a lot of senses for that. Like, you're dealing with job stress, you're dealing with friend stress, you're dealing with this, you're dealing with that. And, like, how all of those things come together. The cracks in the panels were brilliant. That's a great way to show how things are – and, you feel that. Like, if you suffer from anxiety, you feel how those cracks are forming as those situations are happening. I still think my favorite part of the entire book – was her going to the dragon trainer and learning to handle her emotions. And the emotions were different colored dragons, like very abstract, like shaped dragons. But that was wonderful. As a whole, this was great. I finished this last night and I put it on my Goodreads, and I did not rate it because I needed time to ingest and kind of like feel all of it. But this was wonderful. This was absolutely great.
Next up is Army of One, Volume 1, written by Tony Lee with art by Yashan Lee. Brother Havoc and Sister Fortune waged a war against each other. Havoc won, and Fortune was shattered into 1,000 shards. 1,000 years later, Carrie Taylor is a teenager who learns she is one of the Shards, and others come from alternate Earths. Now, Carrie and a group of the other Shards must defeat a great evil, but whose side is everyone on? Matt and Tabitha, I know you both said you aren't too far into this one. Are you far enough to kind of talk about it?
I am not far enough into the story to feel like I can talk about it. However, I will say, like, I opened this and I read maybe 2 or 3 pages and I was like, man, why does this feel so familiar? This is so, oh, it's Saga. Like, and then I like went back and I'm like, is Brian K. Vaughan here? Like, what's happening? And I think that took me out of it a lot, because then as I was reading through the panels, I was comparing the art and like the physical features and especially the facial expressions was just straight out of Saga for me. And like the artwork is so similar that I couldn't stop the comparison. So I don't know if I'm going to continue this, because I think I'm now trapped in my own head and now I just want to reread Saga.
Matt, what about you?
I also opened this up and got immediate Saga vibes. Like, art style wise, it's very much along the same lines. Story wise, once you get into it, it is drastically different. I'm enjoying this. There's definitely parts of this that I think are very fresh and inventive. I like that the Shards of Sister Fortune come from different universes and they all have to either work together or work against each other. There are a few moments of unobtainiumness, like Brother Havoc and Sister Fortune. It's a little too on the nose for me. But at the same time, like, overall, so far, the story is enough that I'm definitely going to finish this, and probably going to be mad that this is the only volume one.
You are going to be mad that it's only the volume one. Because I finished it, and I'm like, I immediately need volume 2, King and Spy. As someone who didn't read a whole lot of Saga, I did not get those vibes. However, like, this book, this story, it's really fun. It's really well done. You get, like, into the Spider-Verse vibes, because you have all these versions of Carrie Taylor, although, like, I don't think really any of them are named Carrie Taylor, aside from the main one.
No.
But still, like, it was one of those where, so the scene where she first meets these other, you know, Shards or whatever, I'm like, why do all of these characters look similar?
I did that too.
But, like, they're not like spitting images of each other. They all have their distinct looks, their distinct personalities, but they all, you know, they are like, well, you guys could be sisters. What? Like, is this just laziness on the artist? And then finally it's spelled out for me. No, it's not laziness. This was actually by design. So then I was like more okay with it. I really enjoyed this story. I thought that, Havoc and Fortune, sure, it's a little bit on the nose. But there were quite a few different surprises. Like, there were at least a couple of moments where, like, I'm confused at the beginning, because it's like, there's this moment where you're not sure who's telling the truth, who's actually good, who's actually evil. And I'm as confused as Carrie is. So, like, it's kind of like one of those things where I think that was done intentionally, and I think that was done very well. But then there's other spots later on in the book where, like, I'm scrolling through and I'm like, what the hell just happened? Although I didn't say quite like that. But yeah, this was really good. I cannot wait for volume 2. Let's go to trailer takedown.
Let's get ready for trailer takedown.
And we've got 2 movies. We have, well, 1 movie, 1 TV show. We have The Watchers versus Fallout. Lydia, let's start with you.
So I actually saw the trailer for Watchers before we watched it tonight. I don't remember where I saw it. I think it popped up maybe randomly as I was watching Peacock the other night. It's strange, but it's just strange enough that it has my attention. However, I feel like that's probably going to end poorly because most of the time, if it's like the trailer's interesting, then you get into it and then it's like really cheesy and lame when it finally comes to an end. Fallout, this trailer gave me a lot more than the first one did. I am still very skeptical, just given the history that video game movies and TV series and things like that have. But I still want to watch it, even though I know nothing about Fallout. All in all, I'm fairly torn on this one, so I'm just going to go 5 and 5.
Yeah, as far as Fallout goes, yeah, I don't really know anything about the game, never played it. I've known people who've played it. But that's really about it. But that said, this trailer was kind of interesting. As much as I'm kind of over apocalypse stories, this is kind of a fresh take. There were definitely some laughs in it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting. Is it something I'm going to actually sit down and watch? Maybe, or maybe I get around to it in 5 years. I don't know. The Watchers. I'm pretty sure I've only seen one M. Night Shyamalan movie, and that was Signs, and I really like Signs, and I will defend Signs till the day I die. However, I have not been interested in another M. Night Shyamalan movie since then, and that still holds true now. So I gave all of my points to Fallout. Matt.
Side note, this is produced by M. Night Shyamalan, but it is written and directed by his daughter.
Still don't care.
Okay. Just FYI. I have known about the book that Watchers is based on for probably about 2 years. It's been on my TBR, just haven't managed to get to it. It was published by a indie press offshoot from Bloomsbury Publishing. It's made the circles in horror book groups that I'm a part of on Facebook. So, like I said, it's been on the radar. I didn't know they were making a movie of it. I'm still intrigued. I still want to read this. I'm probably going to watch this. My only problem with the trailer is it kind of gives a mishmash of Bird Box, John Krasinski one that we
the
just
Quiet
watched.
Place.
The Quiet Place. It's kind of got a mishmash of those kind of movie vibes altogether. But I am still intrigued because I think at the end of the day, it's a creature feature and I like weird, creepy creatures in movies. Fallout, there's so many Easter eggs to this trailer. There's so many things that just hit that are the same as the games. It's been years since I played any of these. It makes me want to go back and play them. But it's still, even though this trailer gives you a lot more of like the world and kind of like what's being built, I'm not real sure what the overall story goal is. And that makes me a little worried. It feels a little Westworld-ish, which is just like a God complex kind of situation. So I don't know. Both these trailers do a good job like making me interested. But I still am going to go 5 and 5 because I can't really decide which I'm more interested in.
Didn't the trailer for Fallout even mention that it was like from somebody on the creative team from Westworld?
Yes.
So I can kind of see where. Yeah. Tabitha.
So I haven't trusted M. Night Shyamalan to be around a movie like to look or breathe on a movie since The Happening. I will never forgive him for whatever the hell that was. This looks interesting, but it also looks like it's going to do that M. Night Shyamalan thing where I have to watch people be boring for 2.5 hours and then for 5 minutes I get fun monsters. And I'm not here for that because his films tend to make me sleepy anyway. And his plot twist are trash. So I have beef with that. But since he didn't write it, maybe. I don't know. Fallout, I have had no interest in playing that video game or knowing anything about that video game. and now I do. So kudos to them for that. So I'm going to give 9 points to Fallout and 1 point to Dakota Fanning. Or Elle Fanning.
Is that actually who it is? I was trying to figure that out.
It's a Fanning. Has to be. With them, with those eyelashes, that has to be a Fanning.
Maybe she's born with it. Maybe she's a Fanning. I guess that's still the same thing.
Okay, it is Dakota Fanning.
Yeah.
I was wondering when I was watching it, but it she looked just different enough. I'm like, is it? I don't know.
As soon as they zoomed into the eyelashes, I have never seen a Fanning in a movie where they didn't zoom in on their eyelashes. It's the most annoying thing ever.
So with a score of 29-11, Fallout radiates Dakota Fanning's eyelashes off.
What?
Let's just go to gut reaction.
Ow! Gut reaction.
And we're going to start gut reaction with Matt and X-Men number 700.
So X-Men 700 is coming this summer. They have said that it's going to be the end of the current era of like the current storyline. The real big news here is that being legacy number 700, as Marvel still continues to do, is there will be contributions from some of the biggest names in X-Men history. Gary Dugan, Kieran Gillen, Al Ewing, and Chris Claremont. There will be a story inside this issue, which is just Chris Claremont. So, I mean, that's fantastic. I mean, he is the epitome of X-Men story writers for the last 30 years. So, I don't know. Who knows what's coming next after this? They don't have a creative team lined up. But, I don't know. They're kind of pulling out all the stops, bringing back the big names for this. So I'm in favor of this. Thumbs up.
Lydia.
I really have no foot in this race, but you're excited, so thumbs up.
I've had to take a break from X-Men. I have gotten behind and to the point where like I have no freaking clue what's going on. So my plan was to get back into X-Men once this whole reboot starts. However, with issue 700, even though it's still technically in the Krakoa era, seeing a new X-Men story from Chris Claremont, okay, fine. I'll jump back in a little early. Thumbs up. Tabitha.
As much as I love X-Men, I have no time for single issue comics to come out, so thumb sideways.
So I'm going to talk about MLB The Show again. Talked about it a few weeks ago, but one of the new features in MLB The Show 24 is a brand new story mode called Road to the Show, Women Pave Their Way. Like the traditional Road to the Show story mode, players can create their own character who then works their way through the character's baseball career. Women Pave Their Way has a, quote, unique to women storyline that follows a lifelong friendship between your character and an NPC named Mia Lewis, who serves as a support system and is a competitive player in her own right. Of course, people on the internet are in their feels about this, saying that this isn't realistic, nobody asked for this, etc., etc. As I do, I have been hate watching a lot of videos on YouTube the last couple of days about this. And one of the arguments that I can kind of see is how, like, some players, you know, want to see, you know, like, aspects of the game that have been recently introduced, like bigger bases and things like that. To that aspect, okay, fine. But all these people are saying, like, oh, this isn't realistic. Okay, cool. Neither is, I don't know, the Florida Marlins winning a World Series or Babe Ruth playing against Sammy Sosa, but those are things that can happen in MLB The Show 24. So I am 100% on board for this iteration of it. Tabitha.
Yeah, giant thumbs up to this. Anything that makes the trolls on the internet mad makes me happy.
Matt.
Yeah, this is just the opportunity to widen the fan base for these games, to bring more people into it. I've always had a good time with these MLB The Show games. Some of the other modes, have always been fun. I'm here for a new mode. I love this. Thumbs up.
Lydia.
OMG, how dare you make it where little girls can have somebody that looks like them in a game that's usually made for boys. Thumbs up. Thumbs down to all the trolls on the internet.
Stealing a little more time because this was another point that I want to make. Hey, it's, it is my show. I can do what I want.
We're all just guests here on Mitch's podcast.
But yeah, like, you know, one of these things that a lot of these trolls were saying was like how, you know, oh, well, you know, like girls don't play baseball. Girls play softball, blah, 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 blah.
Bullshit.
While, while I don't see it happening in our lifetimes, I feel like baseball is one of the few sports where women could play competitively in a team against men. I think that is a sport where that's possible.
Literally the size, it, men be talking about the size matters, the only difference. In the game of softball and baseball is the size of the ball.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and they pitch underhanded.
Oh, so they're better pitchers and the balls are bigger. Got it.
Tabitha, let's all be happier and talk about the Worcester or that public library.
So very conveniently, I... got really lucky in life. And I just want you to know.
Worcester.
is the correct pronunciation of that. So the, whatever she said, public library in Massachusetts introduced March Meowness to help create, to help cardholders who have fines on their accounts. Throughout the entire month, fines will be cleared for anyone who shows up to the library and shows them a photo of a cat. The library is already fine fee free, so it's basically just as like to help people who have had like book related accidents in the past. It can be their own cat, a friend's cat, a photo of a cat. You can draw a cat however you want. Bring a cat, show them. Fine's taken care of. This is amazing. This is perfect.
Perfect.
I hate you. I'm obsessed with this. This was the cutest thing I've ever seen, and their little like marketing stuff for it is even more adorable if you want to get online and look at it. Huge thumbs up.
Matt.
This is a wonderful idea. I don't really know what to say other than just going to be more people scouring the internet for cat videos. Thumbs up.
Lydia.
So if you just show up at the door with your cat, is that acceptable?
I wouldn't know why not.
Thumbs up. Cats and books.
Yeah, I saw this story and meant to post this story and forgot, so I was so happy when you posted it. I love this idea. This is so wonderful. Thumbs up. Paws up. And actually, Tabitha, I'm going to stick with you, and we're going to go to the Lin-Manuel Miranda News Desk.
Coming to you live from In the Heights, the Lin-Manuel Miranda News Desk.
Okay, this is going to be very, very short. We have talked about Moana 2 in the past when we weren't sure who was going to be on board and who wasn't going to be on board. Dwayne Johnson has officially signed on, as has the voice actor for Moana. However, what we are not getting in Moana 2 is any more Lin-Manuel Miranda. He will... basically be too expensive based on how much money Disney lost on Wish for them to afford Lin-Manuel Miranda. So they were like, no thanks. So what they have now for the music is going to be collaborators that worked with Miranda on Moana. So it'll be fine. It's still coming out in 2024. Just no Lin. So thumb sideways. I think he brought something special to Moana with his lyrics. But we'll see how it goes.
Matt.
So Moana 2 is Lin Light. I'm going to have...
Linless.
It's Linless.
Linless.
Yeah. I mean, it's not like a medium dose of Lin.
Okay.
Just no Lin.
Okay. I mean, they're getting people that have worked with Lin, and I think at he's one of those people that you work with him enough. Some of his... brilliance is going to rub off, so I think it'll be okay for the music. Thumbs up.
Lydia.
So for a split second there, I thought you were going to say that they were just going to use like AI or something to like make it up, and I was going to be super angry. But the fact that it's some of the people that collaborated with him makes it a little bit easier to swallow. So I'm still going to go thumb sideways.
Yeah, thumb sideways. On the one hand, yes. If it's people who have collaborated with him, it's people who know how it works, or how he works, rather. But on the other hand, this is very much like, Mom, can we have Lin-Manuel Miranda in Moana 2? And Mom is like, no, we have Lin-Manuel Miranda in Moana 2 at home, and this is Lin-Manuel Miranda in Moana 2 at home. That is very hard to say, guys. Just letting you know.
That's a lot of M sounds. I'm pretty proud of you.
Matt, let's talk about X-Files.
So, if you didn't know, the X-Files creator, Chris Carter, is not just a brilliant TV writer and director, but he is legit an artist. He went to college for art. He got his start making mass market pottery, basically, which he says helped him learn repetition to do things over and over until you get it perfect. In the gap between the last two seasons of X-Files, the last one and the reboot, he went back to his art roots. And for the last two Saturdays in LA, he has had an exhibit of a lot of his pieces of art. Two of them are a 13-foot tall back to back called Xanax and Manic. right. It's got to do with like media and social consumption. There's an entire room of X-Files stuff, including show notes and other actors that were considered for the roles. Sadly, again, this was like the last two Saturdays and it was in LA. There was some merch you could buy, but I don't know. I still think it's fun that he was able to showcase another side of his talent that really basically nobody knew even existed. So thumbs up.
Lydia.
Yeah, it's cool that he actually got to like show, hey, I can do more than one thing. So good for him. Thumbs up.
Yeah. You go Chris Carter, right?
Yep.
Okay. Because it's Ryan Coogler who is the new showrunner.
Yes.
And I kept wanting to say like Ryan Coogler. And I'm like, wait, no, that's not him. So you go Chris Carter. Thumbs up. Tabitha.
Yeah, I like this. I especially like the inclusion of the X-Files stuff because, you know, at the end of the day, that's what brought the people in there.
Yeah.
So, A+ marketing.
So, in case you guys didn't know, there were a lot of bad things that happened in 2020.
Really?
Yeah. One of them being that Matthew Lillard's character Shaggy was recast in the movie Scoob, but he's making a comeback. Talking to Tunato, Lillard said, quote, I can't really talk about it yet, but there's a new project I'm associated with that will allow kids to put themselves in a Scooby-Doo adventure. I'm giving this a giant thumbs up, even though I don't know what this adventure is going to be yet. But it was very well documented. Well, it's been well documented for years how much Matthew Lillard loves playing Shaggy, but especially when he lost that role, it was very well documented how like, no guys, he should have still been Shaggy, because to an entire generation of kids, he is Shaggy. So to see him make a comeback, that's awesome. Tabitha.
Yeah. As much as I'm not here for Scooby-Doo, I'm a ride or die for Matthew Lillard. So thumbs up.
Matt.
I have always loved Scooby-Doo pretty much in every iteration. All of the cartoons, and then when they made the live action and they put him in as Shaggy, I was like, that's the best you can, like, that's the absolute best you can pick when it's not Casey Kasem doing the voice. He is the physical embodiment of Shaggy in those movies. It was sad to see him lose the role. I'm glad he's gonna be back. I don't even really care what that ends up being. I'm here for it. Thumbs up.
Lydia.
I still have refused to watch or acknowledge the Scoob movie. Just the trailers alone made me mad. Matthew Lillard is Shaggy. If you're not talking about Casey Kasem, like when Casey Kasem retired and he took over, like, that was the most perfect thing that could have happened. So I'm so happy that he's coming back. Thumbs up.
Tabitha, let's talk about the city and its uncertain walls.
So, Haruki Murakami is coming out with his first novel in 6 years, and it's coming out in November. And the novel is being billed as an ode to books and the libraries that house them. They've been calling it a love story, a quest, a parable for those strange post-pandemic times. This is coming out, like I said, in November. We've had a very, it's got some tiebacks to his last novel that he wrote, but it's not like a sequel or a follow-up or anything. I think it's just set in a similar location from what I understand. I have only read one Murakami book, and I did not feel smart enough to be reading that book as I was reading it, but he is touted as one of the greatest authors of our generation, so I'm going to give this a thumbs up for the simple fact that I feel like we're always waiting on the next great novel, and I feel like it keeps not happening, so thumbs up for that.
Matt?
I feel like I've read a collection of his short stories, and they were kind of like Tabitha said, you almost feel like you're not smart enough because, like, there's so many things going on, and there's so many levels that are happening all at once, and you know every single one of them is intentional. His books are ones that I want to get into further, and maybe this will be, you know, further inspiration to do that. But thumbs up.
Lydia?
I'll be honest, I have absolutely no idea who this guy is. So just for that alone, I'm going to go thumb sideways because I have absolutely no frame of reference.
I'm also going to go thumb sideways as much as I want to give it a thumbs up because it's a, you know, like, if you're happy, I'm happy situation. However, I already have enough problems thinking if I'm smart enough or good enough or whatever. So the last thing I need to do is to read a book that will also make me question that. So, yeah. Matt, speaking of authors, let's talk about Brandon Sanderson.
So Brandon Sanderson, back printing money again. So there's kind of two parts to this story. One, he is doing a new backer kit, Kickstarter, whatever you want to call it, crowdfunded, for the second book in his Stormlight Archive series. Within like 24 hours, it was like $14 million. One of the things about this Kickstarter, though, is that like at the most base level, what you get is another new secret project that he wrote basically without anybody knowing. I saw it on TikTok. He's like, what? You're not supposed to just go on vacation and sit on the beach and accidentally get inspired and maybe write a whole book? I'm like, son of a bitch. Like, this guy just, like, he takes a poop and he's written a whole nother 300,000 word novel. I'm like, I don't, how do you do that? Anyway, there's that. The other thing is that he has been working with Audible, because Audible gets authors get a very small portion of Audible money. So he has not put his books on Audible for that reason. He has been working with them intentionally over the last couple of years, to gain some ground for authors. He doesn't have the final goal of what, like, royalties that he thinks authors should get. But they're moving closer to actually getting something significant, more than 25%, which is where most of them currently are. I'm going to go thumbs up just because he just continues to do great things for books and the book community.
Lydia?
Thumbs up? I don't really have anything else to say to all of that.
Yeah, no, definite thumbs up. While outside of that Vault comic that we read that he wrote, like, years ago, that I'm pretty sure that's the only thing of his that I've read. However, like, it's still one of those things where it's like, I recognize what you're doing. But that said, how he manages to write all these things that quickly, you know, how that theory of, like, if you put enough monkeys on typewriters, eventually they'll knock out the works of Shakespeare. That's what he's got right now. Tabitha.
Oh my God. He's a machine. Like, I don't understand. He's like, oh, woke up today, wrote two novels. let me go take a nap now. It blows my mind. He's slowly becoming one of my favorite authors of all time. I also like his quirky personality and his like acknowledgement of the fact that he's like, I don't know how I do it. I just do. Why are you guys judging me? You're welcome. Thumbs up.
So can we just appreciate how on one end of the spectrum we have Brandon Sanderson and the other end we have George R.R. Martin?
This is why. Yep. Now you're understanding why I would like George R.R. Martin to simply pass away. So Brandon Sanderson could be like, I'm so sorry. Did you guys need me to finish that entire book series real quick?
By the way,
I actually already did it. Here you go. I've had this ready for years. Slides a manuscript across the table.
Saved in a folder in the back of his computer.
Right? He's like, oh, wait, hold on. I wrote that on a Tuesday in what? I don't know. Here you go. Do you want that in PDF or printed?
Like, it takes him longer to print it than it did to write it.
Right?
He would probably need a little bit of time, though, because like when he originally wrote it, he made enough changes to where like it wouldn't be like Game of Thrones. Like he changed like character names or whatever. So, you know, just in case he finally would be like, you know what, I'm just going to do this.
Brandon Sanderson writing Game of Thrones fan fiction.
Exactly.
You know, honestly, in his downtime, that's probably what he's been doing.
So, kind of keeping with audiobooks, Tabitha, let's talk about Spotify.
So, warning, this may take me a minute. There's kind of a lot to unpack here. Spotify? Okay. So, Spotify has, I've never been a fan of Spotify ever in my life. I will never have a Spotify account. But they've announced a new subscription tier that says it gives book lovers more listening options, but the subscribers would only save $1 a month. So the monthly subscription costs $9.99 and includes 15 free listening hours of audiobooks. That's the same as the premium plan. But the $10.99 premium plan, subscribers get 15 hours of audiobooks plus free ad-free music. The end. But the audiobook plan still has ads for music services.
What?
Right. So essentially, the audiobook listeners are paying the same amount while getting half the benefits. I had to read this article like six times because I'm like, what did it say? So it also doesn't offer any additional perks at all, and they're capping the listening limit for premium subscribers and the book lovers options. So for $12.99, subscribers can buy 10 extra hours if they run out between billing cycles. New listeners are getting upset. Potential or old listeners and old subscribers are upset versus the premium option. It's literally a mess. Like, it doesn't make any sense. People have reached out to Spotify for an explanation. They're not getting anything. Audible is priced at $14.95 and includes unlimited listening at the basic plan. Which, so now people are like, buy Spotify, I'm just going to go to Audible. And the other problem is Spotify's treatment of audiobooks when it comes to the publishing industry is not great. Publishers like Macmillan told their writers that royalty payments will only apply for each full listen of their book. So one person listening to a 10-hour long audiobook or two people listening to 5 hours, for example, is different and they won't get paid. So if you start it and you buy it and you end up not liking it, you've already paid them $10.99 for your subscription. But that author doesn't get anything until you complete it.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah. So they're saying authors are going to be paid less. Publishers are going to be paid less. They've kind of screwed the pooch on this one. I'm giving them a thumbs down.
Matt.
Yeah, I have Spotify Premium for the music and for the like commercial-free music. I realized a few months ago that they added audiobooks. I haven't even messed around with that. I know that they're kind of notorious for their shiesty payments to musicians, but I've been the Spotify member for so long that everything would go away if I didn't have any more. I haven't tried the books. I don't know that I'm ever going to, and I'm not going to give them the benefit of the doubt at this point either, so thumbs down.
Lydia.
I've never liked Spotify either. I will stay with Pandora till the day I die. The only thing I use Spotify for is to listen to podcasts because it seems to be the best place for that as far as like streaming goes. But the way that they handle things and the fact that they're not paying these authors for things unless somebody listens to the entire book when they're already being paid for it is ridiculous. Giant thumbs down.
Yeah, I'm also going to give this a thumbs down. I also have Spotify Premium, and I've noticed, like, last few months they had they introduced the audiobooks. And I've saved a few audiobooks to listen to. I don't think I've really messed around with it that much, though. Did not realize that there was a monthly limit that you could listen to. And just the simple fact of, you know, like, that they don't have the... where the authors don't get paid until the book is finished. Like, you know, like, hey, just because I'm bad at reading or hearing audiobooks and it takes me 7 years to listen to this one audiobook, you should still get paid because I got part of the way through. Matt, let's go to the unknown. Matt, let's go to the unknown.
So we're going to continue with the viral Willy Wonka experience from Wales.
I'm sorry.
Lydia's got to get her giggles out.
It was just the look.
Yeah. You said that, and I looked at you like this, and I looked at her, and we're both like, and then I'm like, a noon?
The unknown.
Did not realize that's what I said.
The unknown. If we had,
he's a British nanny now.
If we had bloopers, this would be on it.
Our existence is the bloopers.
Continue.
So last week we talked about the viral Willy Wonka experience in Wales.
Yes.
One of the things that made headlines about this was a random character in a silver mask holding a mirror that was titled as the unknown. No idea how this character relates to Willy Wonka in any way, shape, or form, but notably scared multiple children that were at this event. A small Scotland-based film production company, Caledonia Pictures, has latched on to said character and are going to be doing a horror movie based on this unknown character. Don't be upset. You don't have to wait long. It should be available by the end of this year. Yes, they're prepping for a late 2024 release for this amazing film. No plot, no casting, no idea, just other than they've latched onto this bizarre character and we're going to get a horror movie based on them. Thumbs down, because we don't need to go back to this experience.
Lydia.
I mean, if anything's going to come out of it, what the heck? If anything's going to come out of this, I mean, a horror movie makes the most sense, so I'm kind of amused by that fact alone. I'm going to go thumb sideways, because I'm curious.
I'm giving this a thumbs down. As amusing as the unknown is, just for the pure, just for, like, the pure, just, like, WTF-ness of it, by the time this movie comes out, people are going to have moved on to like 17 different things. Like, I read somewhere earlier where, like, people are predicting this is going to be like the Halloween costume. No, by Halloween, people are not going to remember who the unknown is, especially come the time this movie comes out. Tabitha.
If you don't think I'm cosplaying as that methed out Oompa Loompa at C2E2, you are the most wrong you have ever
but see,
been.
C2E2 is next month. That is understandable.
I am with Lydia. Like, I'm kind of interested to see the nightmare dreamscape that is whatever this could be. I also hope that it's completely done by AI, because I hope they spoof the shit out of this. Thumbs up to them.
Real quick, speaking about that that Oompa Loompa, I saw somebody post, like, there were other pictures taken of this Oompa Loompa, but, like, more normal pictures where she was actually, like, interacting with the children and everything like that. And it made me feel bad that we all spent, like, this last week, like, laughing at her existence, because it's like, oh, you were actually trying, and somebody just caught you in a really bad moment. Like, some of those pictures, like, okay, like, I see what you're doing now, and we just got that really one bad picture.
I mean, that is, like, all of our lives, though, right? Yeah.
Accurate.
Yeah. But like, you catch me in one really bad moment, but the really bad moment is my whole life. It's the pictures where I'm happy and interacting with the children that are, like, not the norm.
Fair. So, as with other recent big movies, Ghostbusters Frozen Empire will have themed popcorn buckets available. So, depending on the theater chain, fans will have the choice of a ghost trap bucket or Slimer buckets, where popcorn is coming out of Slimer's mouth. So, I saw two different versions of this. One where it was like an AMC Slimer bucket, and then the other one, it was like Cinemark. The Cinemark one terrifies me. Like, either way, I don't want to reach into Slimer's hand to get popcorn. Mouth. I don't want to reach my hand into Slimer's mouth to get popcorn. But especially the Cinemark one, like, it just looks creepy AF, and I'm just not here for it. I'm giving this a thumb sideways because the Ghost Trap one does look cool. I would spend money on that. I would spend money to not see the Slimer one. Tabitha.
I need them to quit making movie pop, like, themed movie popcorn buckets that just give you the heebs. So, thumbs down.
Matt.
I'm with Mitch on this. I love Slimer, but I do not need, yep, I do not need that as a popcorn bucket. I'm not reaching down Slimer's gullet to eat popcorn at a movie. But that Ghost Trap one, especially the one that lights up, that's pretty badass. Yeah. I kind of want that. So I'm going to have to go thumb sideways because one's great. The other one is awful.
Lydia.
Yeah, like, why did they have to make both of these? They could have just stuck with the one and been perfectly fine. But no, they had to make it weird. And I'm uncomfortable now. Thumbs down.
Yeah, I mean, that's usually my job.
It's true.
To make things weird, yeah.
Ain't uncomfortable.
Yeah. Tabitha, you have our last story of the night. Let's talk about goats.
Y'all, this was the best day of my life. So, a herd of goats that were clearing an enclosure, where they were clearing out the underbrush in Arlington, Texas, in the Crystal Canyon Nature Area, escaped. The Arlington Police Department, the Arlington Park District had them out clearing out the underbrush to prevent fires during, you know, fire season. It's a normal thing that they do. And it ended with them running rampant through a neighborhood and down a residential road. one goat wandered off and the rest just kind of followed.
Bad goat.
There is body cam. Oh my god.
I thought you were about to say there were bodies.
There are bodies everywhere. There's body cam footage shared by the Arlington police that is showing this officer trying to wrangle this herd. And the officer is, like, talking to cars as they're passing. And he's going, "Go, goats. Go back where you came from, please." And he's, like, just talking to them like they can understand him. And then this he's like talking on his thing and he's like, "Who knew we were goat herders now?" Like, trying to make jokes, and somebody says something to him in one of the cars, and he's like, "I didn't even know we had goats." He is so deadpan about it, and he's literally like, "No, please go this way. No, we're no." And they're just like in this big herd running down this road, and then every once in a while in the video you just see a random straggler goat come running up the side, and he's like looking at him like, "Where did you come from? Where did you come from?" And they were eventually put back in their enclosure. the company that brings in the goats is called Open Space Development, and what a job. I want this job. They are expected to, these goats are expected to consume 50 miles of brush in 2 weeks.
Oh, wow.
And, like, they're paid for. These are just goats living their best lives, saving the world, saving us from forest fires. But sometimes they need to go on a little adventure. If you have a minute and a half to pull up this video and you are having a bad day, I promise that you will be laughing hysterically by the end of it. I've watched it, like, 4 times, and I think I've laughed each time.
So these goats are literally the goat?
Yes, truly. They're brilliant, and they're all looking back at this cop like, sorry. So sorry, sir. We got lost.
I would 100% be that cop. Like, yep. Hi, excuse me. Hi. Can you please?
And he's like clapping at him. Like, yeah. go. And they're looking at him like, don't tell me what to do.
Excuse you. Don't clap at me, sir.
That video is it's comedy gold. It's fantastic. Because yes, he is. He's like, it's like, I don't even know how I got here type of situation. He's like, but this is what we're doing today. It's like, you know, he's going to go home and, you know, he's going to get home and like, what'd you do today, honey? Well, I chased some goats down the street. What?
I didn't even know we had goats.
That's the best line of the whole video. Because you could tell it was a response to somebody in that car.
Yeah, being like, what are all these goats about? I don't know. I didn't even know we had goats.
And that's not even a, I don't get paid enough for this moment. That's a, wait a minute. I actually don't mind this.
He's literally living his best life. It's so funny. Excuse me, please. Goats, please go.
It's one of those days that makes you not hate your job so much.
Right. He switches careers. Now he's a goat herder. Turns in his badge the next day, like slaps it on the desk. Leaving to become still a goat herder.
Still keeps the gun, though.
I mean.
Still got to keep those goats in place somehow.
The goats.
So, all right. Yeah, we're out of stuff to talk about. So, bye?
Bye.
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 Oh, Jesus.
That's going to do it for this episode of The Geek Awakens. If you have any questions, comments, or concerns, shoot us an email at thegeekawakenspodcast@gmail.com.
It would be a shame if you didn't follow us on Facebook and Instagram at The Geek Awakens Podcast or on Twitter at Geek Awakens.
Theme music created and produced by E. Cannon Beats.
Our logo was designed by Shay McCain.
Thanks for listening. We'll catch you next time. We're boldly gone.